And DAB Digital Radio, it's time for the Daily Service, led by Andrew Greystone. You're listening to Radio 4 FM, where we begin a new book of the week. Robert Wyatt enjoys a distinctive place in the music scene, first as a member of the Soft Machine and later as a solo artist, and his work is celebrated in a recent authorised biography. To begin with, a look into his early years in Different Every Time by Marcus O'Dare.
My earliest memory, says Robert Wyatt, sitting in a wheelchair that displays an Access All Areas sticker from a rare live performance with jazz double bassist Charlie Hayden. He's looking out of the window and thinking, I am four. It is my fourth birthday and I'm going to remember this. I decided to remember it and I do. Six decades on, Robert chuckles into a beard bushier than that of Fidel Castro. A baby grand piano dominates the room, surrounded by trumpet, cornet, and assorted percussion instruments. One wall is given over to vinyl, another to books, on music, leftist politics, and pataphysics, the Belle Epoque pseudoscience that paved the way for surrealism. The home studio is in the English market town of Louth, where Robert has lived for close to 25 years, with Alfie, wife, manager, co-lyricist, and the artist responsible for all his solo album covers. Robert was born in Bristol on the 28th of January, 1945, to his mother, Honor, a journalist and broadcaster. VE Day arrived when Robert was 3 months old, and Honor returned with the BBC to London, where they shared a house in Dulwich with another family, the Palmers, and with Robert's half-siblings, Julian and Prudence. The two children from Honor's short-lived marriage to the journalist, Gordon Glover. Robert was a very bright little boy, recalls Julian, today a successful actor. He was a light boy. He lit. That sort of light. Just before his second birthday, Robert contracted mastoiditis, which brought him close to death. Although surgery saw him through, he still suggests, semi-seriously, that the operation might have damaged the left hemisphere of his brain. I do live in a dream world, and I never haven't done. For the first 6 years of his life, Robert had an adoring mother and an entirely absent father, as George Elledge was still married to his first wife, Mary Burtonwood. George and Honor had met in Mallorca in the early 1930s, as part of a circle of literary expats orbiting the poet Robert Graves. But it wasn't until after the war, in 1951, that George separated from Mary and moved into Dulwich with Honor. Robert acquired two further older half-siblings, Julia and Mark Elledge, and an extra surname. Having been Robert Wyatt at infant school, he now became Robert Wyatt Elledge. Robert seems to have inherited his dad's sense of humour. George and Robert thought the word sausage was just the funniest word in the world, recalls Prue. Robert's love of word games also derived from Lewis Carroll and Edward Lear. This pair of Victorian writers, surrealists before their time, helped to inspire Robert's love of fun, puns, and nonsense. He lists Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, along with Bubble and Squeak, The Spanish City of Granada, the saxophonist Gilad Atzmon, and the Morning Star newspaper, as one of the five things that make his world a better place. Another crucial influence from childhood was A.A. Milne, creator of Winnie the Pooh. Robert has described the humble, honey-loving teddy bear as his earliest role model, and he will still sign off an email with Pooh's Tiddly-Pom. The Wyatts and the Elledges came from very different social backgrounds. Robert's maternal roots are a series of distinguished architects. James Wyatt, known for his neoclassical and Gothic revival work, is the most renowned. R.E.S. Wyatt was an England cricket captain. Horace Wyatt, Robert's maternal grandfather, was a founding member of the RAC, as well as a writer, noted for his 1917 wartime reworking of Alice's Adventure in Wonderland as Malice in Kulturland. "I really liked him," recalls Robert, of his very own Lewis Carroll. "He taught me about ballet. He said, 'Pas de deux' means father of twins. I can see that it's not just from my dad that I get some stuff. I can trace some of it to Horace." Robert had less in common with the most prominent Wyatt of recent times. Journalist and politician Woodrow Wyatt was Honor's second cousin. Originally a Labour MP, he lurched to the right in the 1970s. Robert describes Woodrow as an appalling man, though he can't resist laughing at the story that, when asked by a Frenchman to confirm the spelling of his surname, Woodrow replied, "Waterloo, Ypres, Agincourt, Trafalgar, Trafalgar." Robert is far more enthusiastic about the ancestors on his father's side. "My granddad, Sam Elledge, was a tailor. Apparently, he was very nice, drank a lot, always laughing, and never had any money because he was always making people clothes for free." George's father might have been a tailor, but he himself fought his way into the middle classes, studying at Liverpool, Cambridge, and Oxford universities. By the time Robert got to know him, George was working as an industrial psychologist. Yet George had previously worked as a music critic, as a classical pianist, had even recorded a couple of 78 records. Robert was taken to the opera well before his 10th birthday and to concerts at London's Royal Festival Hall. George also introduced his son to jazz. Even as young as 12, Robert was delivering talks to the school jazz club. Honor wrote several books, among them a guidebook called The Young Traveller in Portugal. She researched the Portugal book in 1953, travelling on a shoestring with 8-year-old Robert and his half-sister Prue. "I absolutely loved the place. Dirt poor, but magical to me at the time." It was, as Robert says, an idyllic childhood. At least up until the age of 11, when his father was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. By 1956, George was no longer able to work. They decided to move to the country and bought a large but dilapidated Georgian manor house in Kent, in the small village of Lydon. The move to Wellington House coincided with Robert beginning secondary school. The Simon Langton Grammar School for Boys in Canterbury looms large in Canterbury music lore. Hugh Hopper, who would later play bass in The Soft Machine, was actually in the same year. "The first time I met him, we had a fight in the playground," laughs Robert. "His parents were conservative, mine were Labour, so we had a fight, and a friendship ensued that lasted forever." There was also the spindly prefect who, in a breach of normal protocol, made an overture to the 15-year-old Robert. "He came up to me and said, 'Elledge, I hear you have a Cecil Taylor record. I wondered if I could borrow it.'" The prefect was Mike Ratledge, already a promising keyboard player and later a pivotal member of The Soft Machine. Robert was unhappy to find himself stuck out in the country. He did find some distraction, however, in using an old army bugle to confuse hounds on the local hunt, an early use of music for political ends. Robert was galvanised by the arrival at Wellington House of the Australian poet and guitarist David Allan, 7 years older and brazenly self-confident. Allan arrived as a lodger in late 1960 via an advert in left-wing journal The New Statesman. "I had enough money for a year in Europe. I wanted to experiment with Ornette Coleman-style free jazz, so I went down to see the family. Robert was much younger than me, but the first thing we did is look at each other's record collections, and they were almost identical. And so I thought, go no further. As he got older, Robert was able to escape from rural Kent, going up to see Mingus and saxophone colossus Sonny Rollins, right there in London. As an atheist, he declares, they're the nearest to gods I ever had. When he queued for an autograph from the pianist Thelonious Monk, Robert instead received a pat on the head, a monk's secular blessing. As well as his love of jazz, David also shared Robert's interest in modernist art and comedy. Scottish poet Ivor Cutler and Spike Milligan's The Goon Show were both favourites on the Wellington House radio. Robert was particularly impressed by David Allen's habit of walking around Canterbury with his dog, a tin can on a string. He made me realise that you could have a life that was nothing to do with anything you'd done at school, says Robert. Dave Sinclair still recalls the first time he saw his future Matching Mole bandmate outside the Langton in about 1959. There was a young lad crossing the road there with very long hair, wearing his school cap back to front and with his jacket inside out. I said to my brother, "Who's that?" And he said, "Oh, that's Bob Elledge." I used to walk an extra half a mile to get on his bus, admits Pam Howard, the woman who would become the first Mrs. Wyatt. Because I fancied him. All his shirts were purple. So he'd get sent home from school.
Change that, Elledge.
And he'd go home and change it for another one exactly the same colour. He really was out there. Robert was often to be found carrying a trumpet over his shoulder on a string strap. He soon moved on to drums, although since he didn't own a kit, he was forced to make do with a combination of kitchen utensils and cardboard boxes. After one of his trips to Paris, David Allen returned with a Californian jazz drummer, George Needorf, who was able to give Robert a few lessons on a snare drum and cymbals. Alfie describes Robert as missing a layer of skin. And that quality of empathy is perhaps what makes his music so affecting. But it has also left him vulnerable. When Robert wasn't doing well at school, George and Honor supported his interest in music, paying for lessons, first on violin, then on trumpet. Surprisingly, Robert struggled to progress, despite his obvious musicality. I couldn't understand reading music. I tried to do it and I couldn't do it. And I thought, I can't go back and face it. One evening, over Christmas 1961, he took a bottle of his father's tablets and swallowed the lot. Robert made a full recovery from his teenage overdose, but it was evidence of the depression from which he would suffer, episodically, to this day. You know that saying, the devil is in the detail. I think the show itself is devilish, but out of that, little beautiful moments can be plucked with luck and skill. That way round is the only way to make sense of it.
Julian Ryan Tutt reading from Different Every Time by Marcus O'Dare, which has been abridged for radio by Katrin Williams and produced by Duncan Minchell.
Homer's Iliad on BBC Radio 4.
Almighty Zeus, we thank you and we beseech you, hear our prayers.
Dramatised by Simon Armitage.
White-faced Helen behind her white veil, wedded to Troy, wearing her wedding dress, or in mourning for Greece.
I come from Sparta, where the soil is red.
The soil is red wherever you walk.
Starring Lily Cole as Queen Helen, The Last Days of Troy, on Sunday afternoon at 3, and then on the Radio 4 website.